Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and I think this is episode 220 now, and for 220, I'm very happy to have back a good friend of the show. It was the last comic book creator who I actually podcasted with in person. That's how long it's been since I was able to podcast with my friends who are creators in my city. But it's none other than the Portuguese prince, the kid who kicked COVID, Mr. Ricky Lima. Ricky.
Oh, yeah, look good.
How's it going?
Good. That's crazy that I was the last person you interviewed.
Yeah.
And at that point, Undergrowth, I had, what, issue three. Out? No, I had issue two. That was it. Now I'm up to six, bro. So... Yeah.
How? Sorry, I just took a sip of water. Is the story complete? Because I was getting them to you via PDF, and then when I would see you, you would give me a copy of it. So I was kind of keeping track as they came out, and we were sort of doing episodes as the issues were being released, but we kind of fell off track. So is the story done?
No, not yet. It's going to be 8 issues. So.
Oh, that's nice.
So it's going to, we're on issue 7, like the artist is working on issue 7 now, and he'll probably be done by like June of next year. So we still got a lot of time. And then releasing the books, like I'm getting a colorist to color them as well. So that probably won't be until 2022 anyway. So it's crazy, man.
Yeah. How has the... I mean, no one planned for this stuff. I talk about it every show with different creators, how it's affecting them. But with the virus and all of the shows and stuff like that, not being able to do it, has it affected your stuff that you've been working on? Or have you been able, do you feel good that you've got all of this stuff that will be released once we get back out there? You'll have, you know, it won't be just a one issue of Undergrowth and people won't know if they can get two. They'll have all of it done. Like, is that exciting?
Yeah. I mean, theoretically, it's exciting. I mean, I'll be a millionaire. People will be buying all these books. But at the end of the day, like, who's going to have money at the end of this, man? You know what I mean? So even when cons open up again, like, are people going to have money to spend at cons? I don't know, man. Who knows? So it's like, it's a catch-22, you know? It's going to be good to be out there and like have people check out your stuff again physically. But we're even 2021, I don't think we're going to be out of the woods yet. You know what I mean?
No.
Like it's going to, yeah. Like 2025 probably will be like, okay again. Like it's crazy. You know, the amount of change that's happened just this year, there's no way next year is going to be any better. So,
yeah.
So I don't know. I'm excited, but at the same time, I'm being realistic, you know?
Yeah. No, that's fair. You really can't be... You can't overly plan right now too far in advance, unfortunately, because, you know, this 2020, I think, it just went to show, like, a whole year can be canceled on you. Never mind a summer, never mind, you know, a trip or a concert. So you really got to play it by ear, and even just being able to travel and go places or visit family, it's almost like we got to take our shot while it's safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you go, the summertime was actually kind of nice because there was that lull and the weather was good so we could be outside and, you know, not have to be confined to small spaces in a home with groups of people so you could see folks. But then all of a sudden it was like, back to, you know, this many cases.
Yeah, come from, right?
It hit hard, man. Just all of a sudden, people were like, yeah, we got up to this many number a day. And I don't know. I don't.
Yeah. Go ahead. We were like below 100 at one point, and now we're at like 1,800. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I won't even pretend to. I have different feelings about this whole thing all the time. And I think my biggest concern are the people who, like you said, you brought up the fact of who's going to have money, right? And it seems as though there's going to still be a lot of people who've been working, lucky enough, have been fortunate to continue their jobs from their home. And those people still went on. But it's those people in the middle, those those people who are artists and those people who own private businesses, like restaurant owners and things like that, who are kind of trying to live out a dream, if you will. Like, they got their dream job, and those people's livelihoods and businesses and stream of income will be affected. So yeah, you're going to have people who will have money to spend. I think the Kickstarters and stuff like that are kind of proving that there are people who want to spend money, but there's going to be a lot who would usually do it that we're not going to be able to. It's going to be weird. It's going to be tough. And I'm worried for those people.
And like, I don't know, I struggle. I guess, like, you know, I guess I'm a small business myself.
Yeah.
But like, but at the end of the day, like, I kind of fluctuate between, like, owning a business, like, that's kind of a luxury, right? Like, that's not a right. That's not anyone's right to own a business. You know what I mean? No. But at the same time, people need services and stuff, right? Right. So, I mean, so people need to provide that. So I kind of, like, flip-flop between, like, you know, businesses fail all the time, whatever, man. But at the same time, it's like, hey, like, we need to do something to help these people out, right? So I don't know. It's weird. It's almost like a big reset on, like, small businesses. People are going to have to, like, rethink how it all works.
Yeah, and it man, I get it. I'm guilty of it, just like I think everybody else who's on this part of the world, where we've picked our conveniences, right? A lot of us shop online. A lot of us, you know, probably everybody just presses a button to get their music or watch their movies. And we're all kind of picking and choosing where we want to go out to interact and engage. But there is, I don't know, I miss still going to the movie theater. I still like going to a bookstore, as much as I'll shop on Amazon. And, you know, I'm guilty of doing that, not supporting local businesses sometimes. But there's nothing like going to a comic book store or to a restaurant. Little, you know, we call them those hole in the walls that make the best food.
Yeah. It's kind of like the big stores are going away, but the small stores will never really go away. It's kind of like books, you know, like having, like, people would rather, for the most part, read, like, digital books because they're cheaper, more convenient. But then, like, a fancy book, like a really well-made book, someone still wants, like, a physical version of that, right? So almost like movie theaters, like, you're not, maybe in the future we're not going to, like, AMCs that have, like, giant screens, but you're still going to, like, smaller art house theaters where you can experience, like, smaller, more intimate things, right?
Yeah.
So that's, I feel like that's kind of where everything's going, right? Is, like, the big blockbuster stuff is just going to be, like, all in your house and whatever. But then, like, the really experiential kind of stuff, that'll still be there.
Do you think,
at least hopefully, I mean.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I think a lot of people have that sense of nostalgia where there'll always be people who are for those type of experiences. It just seems as though more and more we're almost being sheep herded away from the physical tangential stuff and being more digitized. Just do it digital. I mean, even just myself working in construction, this is a little bit of a tangent, but you kind of see, if I always go into these homes thinking, if I had to live here, would I be able to, or do I just have too much crap? And I do have too much crap. We were talking about that before, but it's part of who I am. I don't just, you know, pile it in just these unreadable piles. And you see, like, these people can't even get a bookshelf, really. Like, where would they put a little book collection? They're not building it so that people can have that. Just be digital. Yeah, and you see it even in how homes are being built, in a way.
See, but is that a response to the way people are? Or are people becoming like that because of the spaces and everything, eh?
Right. That's a good question. And I think there's a combination of what you said. I think the spaces got smaller in order to have, you know, more quote unquote property to sell. And then because of that, people's habits changed.
Right. It's kind of like recently I've been, like, getting pissed off at, like, front lawns. Such a waste of space, man. What do you need a front lawn for? Like, it's still good. Or, like, I don't know, I recently went on a walk, and then I got lost, and then I ended up on a golf course. And it was, like, it's huge. It's completely empty now. It's such a waste of space, man. You can, I don't know. These things, like, like, yeah, we should downsize, but at the same time, it's like, do we need all this crap? Like, I don't know. I mean, books and stuff, fine, sure. But a front lawn? What do you need a front lawn for? Get out of here. Backyard, I'll accept. But front lawn? Get out of here.
So what do you do with the front lawn, Ricky?
My parents take care of it. I don't know.
I'm saying what would you do with the front lawn? Because it's part of the property, right?
Build more house, more rooms.
Extend the house right to the street.
Yeah, why not? Build a bigger garage. I don't know. Something like that.
So we can collect more books.
Yeah, exactly. Like a library in your house. Yeah. So, and of like graveyards too. I'm like, yeah, what a waste. Just build like giant mausoleums, like 75 foot or 75 story tall mausoleums, man.
Oh, you're kidding. You're killing me. What a waste. Yeah, we were talking before about our collection, quote unquote, problems, how we just accumulate so much stuff. And I was just saying to you how my wife discovered that it's part of why I'm always happy, that excitement of what's coming next and what to look forward to. And you had said something interesting, how some people collect miserably. Like, you worked in a comic book shop. What have you noticed about people who collect? I'm always interested in that.
Yeah, it's like, so these people who are like miserable, they do it for the money. So they're looking to like cash out on the biggest titles. So they're always stressed out because they want, you know, the best, the biggest books and the highest quality and quantities and stuff. So they're not having any fun. And it's so sad to see because like these are the guys like that are kind of like they've shouldered the industry because they're spending so much money, but you know, they're not progressing the industry. They're not helping it because they're unhappy sad sacks. So it's like, so they don't care about the stories or anything. They just care about making the money.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that at cons. Do you ever see those guys at cons who are like, just like miserable? And you're like, what are you doing here, man?
Yeah. I definitely know what I've seen some guys like that. Rarely at the comic book shop I go to, but there was a guy who was a speculator and he would come in and drop a ton of cash, sometimes saying, just give me all of the copies you've got of that. This is going to be hot. And you knew that they were getting it to flip it. But I don't know about you as a collector. How would you define yourself in what, you know, whether it's the format, whether it's a specific, do you buy everything? Do you buy to read? Like, how would you describe your collecting habit?
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's weird. Cause like, I only collect single issues. I used to get like graphic novels, but then I was like, yeah, I'm not into these. So I basically only get to single issues. And then I read them digitally through other means. So it's kind of like, you know, I'm getting, and I don't anticipate selling any of the books. Like I'm not sitting there to sell them, but it's always cool to have. I like having stuff that have stories behind them. So like, you know, the first Miles Morales, you're like, oh, look at this Miles Morales. I got this. And now it's like this huge thing. And you're like, yeah, that's cool. And then, you know, Spider-Gwen, you're like, oh, this is the first Spider-Gwen. So it's not necessarily I'm trying to like sell it, but I like the ideas behind them and like stories that they present. Or even like I'll collect books that are like nostalgic to me, like, you know, books that I knew as a kid and I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. Or like creators I really like. So if there's so Headlopper by Andrew McLean, I tried to collect like all the variant covers that they put out, but eventually it got too hard. So I stopped, but I enjoyed those. And then even like with the Scotty Young Marvel covers, when those were first coming out, I really liked Scotty Young's art. So I was picking those up. But then it got out of hand. So I stopped because like Marvel started putting out like 5 Scotty Young covers a day. And I was like, I can't do that. So, and then they became like really exclusive. Like you had it was like a 1 in 25 variant Scotty Young. And I was like, I'm not going to pay all that money for that.
Right.
So,
yeah, and then they hook you, right? Once, because there's this cover, there's that cover, and you want them both. And you don't know how to decide because, like you said, you're collecting all the Scotty Youngs. I was the best type of collector for a comic book shop, not for myself. because I would buy single issues and follow certain series, and then I would also buy collected editions, and I would also, if there was a hot book that, you know, people were all talking about, I wanted at least a copy of it to be part of the story of when it came out, and, you know, I remember when this event occurred and I got that book. Like, you, I was everything. So you can't keep up. It gets exhausting. And after a while, as much as you like it, it's like, I'm not enjoying this because these issues are just piling up to make sure I have them to get to them when I don't even remember some of the stories now because of the way I'm reading.
Yeah. But I mean, like, whose fault is that? That's not our fault. That's these companies who are putting out books. They know that that's what we want. They make it like that. Yes. And then they make it really confusing. And it's like, I don't understand why this is so hard.
Yes. And I said all of my crap because you made a good point of like, and then they start making them exclusive and making 5 and 1 out of 20. It's like, yeah. I can't do this. I want to, but you've made it. You've made it predatory in a way. Like, you're playing on my addiction now, which is good business, I guess. But it also hurts what ends up happening. Like you described in the very beginning, is that you start getting people in it who are shouldering a good portion of the business. And I think what is not being experienced, which you should, is the story, is the craft. Mm-hmm. Right, that's really what should be the steam of the industry. And I think it's, would you say split 50-50?
Like split what? Like the,
as far as what feeds the monetary support system, like people who are collectors and read, and then you got people who are collectors and flip.
Yeah, that's tough to say because it's these tough, collectors, right? Like, they're buying the books from the stores at cover price and then selling them for like crazy amount of money, but no one's profiting off of that. Like, Marvel's not profiting off of that.
No.
So they're kind of like bolstering the industry, but at the same time, like, Marvel's not necessarily making more money than, I guess they are because people are buying more. But at the end of the day, like, the real money's in the aftermarket, right? So it's kind of tough. But yeah, I don't know. I think it might skew more towards the collectors, the speculators that are like bolstering the industry, because people like me and you, we don't spend nearly as much money as those guys. You know what I mean? So
yeah, and I changed my collecting habits, especially this year, where I'm getting more omnibuses and more big bound collections to occupy the shelf space. So if I read, I like to, instead of trying to read, Teen Titans and then the X-Men and then this and then an Image book and try to just read, a binge read a series with a particular artist and or a writer's vision, get to know it well, and then move on. Like, I don't have to, what happened last time in Green Lantern? Try to read it as a full season.
Yeah. In many ways, that Marvel's making more money off of that, so... There you go. So maybe you are helping them a little bit more. You know what I mean?
I am that. Yeah, I am that guy in a way. But I don't. Yeah, I don't. I collect to enjoy an experience instead of collect and try to make. People always ask me that when I tell them I collect comics. Do you have like a lot of valuable ones? Like, do you got ones where you can make a lot of money? And it's like, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got the first Miles Morales. That's a big comic now. It's a hot comic.
Yeah, totally. Or like, I'm trying to think like what the most expensive book I have is. I don't know, maybe Saga number 1, but...
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I do have a Samurai Santa. You know, that's the first Jim Lee credit. He like inked Samurai Santa. So that's kind of weird.
Wow. But, I'm sure that's a hot one too. Wow. Cool.
I have an Undergrowth number 1. I have lots of those.
I got a copy of that. That one, and I have it signed too. So
wow, look at that.
Mm-hmm. So how has been your creative process in this year? Have you been inspired or lack of inspiration?
No, it's been the worst, man. So, like, in January, I ran a Kickstarter for a book, and then I was like, this is going to be easy, man. I got this. And then after the Kickstarter was done, I was like, okay, I'm going to finish writing Undergrowth, and then I'll start on this. So I finished Undergrowth, I think, like, February maybe, and then March hit, and then we went into lockdown. And I was like, plenty of time to work, and then clearly not, because, like, it became so difficult. I didn't realize that not going out of the house was a problem. So it became so difficult to, like, focus on anything and work on anything. And so over the span of, like, 6 months, I, like, was really struggling on making any progress in this book. And, like, I like to think it's because of the quarantine and, like, everything that's going on. But also, too, like, maybe the story was, like, too unclear to me, and I would just, I bit off more than I could chew. I don't know. I was, like, really struggling. So it's a combination of a lot of stuff. But then when I got COVID, I was like, you know what? Like, maybe I should just not do anything. So I stopped, like, literally just, like, stopped doing anything and just, like, hung out, watched movies, played video games. And I'm still kind of doing that, but my brain is starting to get a little bit more excited about working on stuff, so maybe that's good, you know?
Yeah, that's great.
Maybe that.
I don't know. No, that's okay. That's okay. How are you feeling, most importantly? Because you just mentioned, and I joked about it at the beginning, but you did have the virus, and you look like you're doing fine. How are you feeling, though?
Yeah, no, I feel good. The only thing is, like, smell and taste is still, like, non-existent, which sucks.
Yeah. It's
like the eating is, like, the worst. I don't know. Like, what's the point? But but it's been, like, I don't know, a month and a half, and it's still not back. So I'm getting a little worried, but hopefully. But I've heard some people say it's been, like, 5-6 months before it comes back. So
How anybody in your family get it as well, or is everybody doing okay?
Yeah, no, everyone's doing good now. So it's like, you know, quarantine works. Yeah, after 2 or 3 days, you're like, ah, it's not a big deal. But it's not a big deal for me because I'm, like, you know, a 30-year-old dude who's relatively healthy, right? So it's like, whatever. But there are people out there who is a big deal for it. So I'm lucky that I got it pretty mild. But
right,
not everyone's as lucky.
Yeah, and just to be clear, this isn't the common cold. We just know what the symptoms feel like. So, you know, be safe. It's very confusing to know what to feel or think about it, but just got to be safe. And all of our friends who have gotten it, like you, Ricky, I'm happy you're doing well, and hope everyone overcomes it if they do get it.
Yeah. And even, like, the healthcare workers, like, you can really tell that they're done, man. Like, they're, like, overworked like crazy, man. Sure. Like, they would call me, and I would have a question, and they'd be like, I don't know, man. I don't know. So they would, like, you know, it was just, like, they just couldn't. It's clear that they're overwhelmed right now with all that's going on.
Yeah.
And it sucks because, you know, we need them to help us, but they're getting screwed pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad and scary for those people who are in that line of work. Anyways, let's talk about good stuff. Let's talk about stuff that we like. You're in good company when, going back to your, like you were saying, that lack of inspiration after March, where you thought you would be able to, like, get a bunch of things done and be inspired, but it was the opposite. I was listening to, the David Tennant podcast.
Okay.
And he had Neil Gaiman on, and he said that the lockdown really affected his ability to write and to be inspired to the point where he wasn't sure if he'd be able to get back on that horse again.
What? So you're just like me. That's crazy.
Yeah, you're just like Neil Gaiman, Ricky Lima.
Yeah. Well, like, I think, like, for writers or artists, really, they're so, like, empathetic towards the world that just, like, the fact that the world is going crazy, like, it's very difficult for them to, like, you know, be inspired to do anything, but...
Yeah, and I think, too, I'm not a writer in that way of creating story, but I can't imagine that no contact from the world, or even the ability to, if you're a writer, to change the scenery. You know, go for a walk, go get a coffee, go people watch. I imagine doing those type of things bring some type of inspiration, whether it's a character, whether it's something you see somebody wear, and just coming up with the stories of people walking by you could trigger those things that if you're in your house all the time, it just gets stagnant. There's no input.
Yeah. You need to experience the world, man. So it's like, and then, you know, so you say that, but so people are like, well, just go online, experience it that way. No. But then online, everything is so crappy online. So it's like, oh, man.
No, it's true. Have you lessened or increased the amount of social media this year? Like, it's been one of those years where I think people are deciding less of it is better. But initially, we had so much more time on our hands and so much news all the time. Like, how did you find your social media interaction this year?
I think I look at social media more, but I post less. And I think that's maybe just because, like, I got nothing to say, really. Like, nothing's going on. So, let's see.
Hello?
Were you going to say something?
Oh, no. I was just waiting for you. I thought something happened, the signal wise. Keep going.
So it's like, but it's hard for me because, like, you know, like I said, I'm a small business. So I got to, like, you know, still promote my stuff and tell people what's going on. But it's hard when you don't post a lot, because then the algorithms don't, you know, favor your stuff. So what do? I don't know. You just sit there and just hope that something hits.
But yeah,
I definitely post less.
Yeah, me as well. I probably should be more interactive if I want to have a podcast that people listen to. But I've been going on Facebook a lot less. I've kept it for Messenger because I like messaging all my friends that I have on Facebook or made through Facebook, but it's just, I don't know. I go on it. I enjoy that initial little bit of interaction. And then I scroll enough where I just like, man, I just suddenly feel irritated again.
And, yeah, totally.
And I just, why do I keep doing this? Like, I stay on this thing until I'm annoyed and I may want to respond, but I'm like, why are you going to, you're just going to get triggered more because you want them to respond back. And it's like, okay, get off.
Yeah.
Go back on Amazon and shop or something. It's horrible.
And it's like, you know, people like share these things that you're just like, how can you possibly think that? You know, like, you know what I mean? It's crazy, man. I don't know. Like, I thought I knew some reasonable people, but then apparently not, man. Like, these people are crazy.
In what's an example of it for your experience? You, like, don't got to mention it.
There's some, like, picture. It was literally just a picture of that Theresa Tam, the person who's in charge of Canada's COVID response, and it was like, oh, like, she's a man, and you're like, okay, what? It's like, she's been lying to you this whole time. It's like, I don't understand what's the point? What are you getting at here? Like, none of it makes any sense. And these people, they're like, yeah, listen to this. And you're like, but there's nothing to listen to. There's nothing. You're not giving me anything. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
I hate it so much. And then what do you say to that person? Like, do you call them an idiot? Like, that's not helpful either, right? I don't know. You just sit there and be like, you're crazy, man.
Yeah. Crazy. I just, on across the board for me, both political views, both whatever people's camps are, they just, whenever they become extreme, it's like, what are you doing? What's the point? Just like you said, like, why? What does this accomplish?
Really?
You know, another person we got to be mad at because they said something stupid. Like, everything is a thing. Everything, and everyone's got to put their post up about it. It's just like, I don't know. There's we've lost sort of the nuance of conversation in a way, or in a lot of ways, but also the discourse, like the valuable discourse of it. And Facebook commenting and Twitter commenting, forget it. Everything is a thing. No more.
Yeah. I don't know if you play video games, but the plot line to Metal Gear Solid 2 is where they try to blow up the internet. So I think we should do that. Just blow it all up. start again.
How long, though, do you think we would last without internet for a day? I think we would all go crazy if anything happened to the precious internet, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, okay, it depends what we're talking about. Like, yeah, internet's very important for, like, infrastructure and, like, you know, communication, everything. But, you know, Facebook or Twitter and Instagram, if that went down for a day, that would be fine. I think people could survive. Or maybe...
That would be interesting. That would be a very, very interesting experience if those, and I don't know how much business, and it's probably a lot, so I'm completely an idiot, how much business would be affected by the shutdown of Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram? And if it was a week, how people, what the outcome would be outside after that week? How they would be acting with each other, or would they be like a refresh button pressed?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you think about what did we do, like, say, you know, like 2003? What did you do online? I don't even remember what I did online.
Back then, it was a lot of MSN chat.
Yeah, MSN chats. That was huge. Yeah, but also, like, Flash games. Played a lot of those.
Flash games? Where was this? What do you mean?
Games online, like, I don't know. Newgrounds was huge. I don't know if you've ever been to Newgrounds.
Okay. Yeah, there was online gaming, obviously, was huge. But I just remember being a lot of downloading music and naughty movies and chatting online on MSN. I don't even remember that much YouTube yet. Wasn't even around? YouTube?
I mean, YouTube was like 2003 or something.
Yeah, right.
But even so, crappy.
It's so interesting. But we were all hooked still in some way. We would go on and spend a whole night talking to a group of friends. It was so funny. Now we do it wherever we are. Doesn't matter where you are, you can do it. You don't even have to be home.
Yeah, totally. Crazy, man.
It's crazy. Have you been reading more? With the, you know, stay at home time. I know you're still working, but have you been reading, watching stuff? What have you been enjoying?
No, well, like, I think the pandemic has affected my attention span, so it's hard to, like, sit down and read. I really have to force myself to do that. So I'm, like, super behind on all my comics, and, you know, I haven't really read anything. Maybe that's part of why it's, like, hard to make stuff. It's because I'm not reading. So I gotta fix that. But in general, since I was on lockdown, I have been trying to play more games for some reason. I just got a PS5.
Ooh.
Super excited.
What game are you playing?
I was playing Detroit Become Human. It's like a movie, basically, where you make the decisions for the characters. And it was, like, super cool. I was really into the game. It's all about androids becoming, like, trying to become humans. So it's pretty cool.
Are you you're a pretty avid gamer, if I remember correctly, right? You stay up to date with what's happening in the gaming world. Do you have a Nintendo Switch too? I know Sean Daly did. He was a big gamer in that regard.
He loves his Switch.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I would consider myself a middle core gamer, maybe. Like, I really like playing video games and stuff, but I don't have as much time as I used to, or even like patience or attention span. So like a lot of games, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I don't have time for this crap. Like if it's too long, forget it. I can't play it. Like those like 80-hour games, it's too much, man.
Yeah, some people love them. I'd probably go crazy because I'm not the greatest video game player. Once I get into a game, I can play it just like anybody. But I think if the Spider-Man game was 80 hours, I would have just gone onto the internet and wanted to know how it ended.
Yeah, it's too much, man.
Yeah.
And like half the time, these games don't even respect your time. Like they'll do something where it's like, yeah, spend 5 hours doing this. And you're like, why don't I just not do that? Why do I have to do that? You know, it's so annoying.
Yeah, it's so immersive, but you realize, you know, people will be like, hey, have you watched that show? Have you done this? Have you? It's like, I'm playing this game now. Like, that's what I'm doing. I'm in, you know, you talk to people like, no, why would I do that? I was on Call of Duty last night. Yeah, but you played it the other day. Like, tonight, go home and watch a movie. No, I got to do Call of Duty. It's online. I got you. So
yeah, especially online, you got to keep up with like the people playing, or else they get better than you, and then you suck.
Yeah, and I remember as a kid watching that movie Wizard with Fred Savage, where they have the, you know, they travel around America playing video games to get to the tournament, and that was the coolest thing as a kid to think like you can go somewhere and win money playing video games, and now it's everywhere. It's literally like a sport. It's crazy what it's become and what people could get paid to be good at video games.
Do you think esports is a sport, or are you against the term sport?
Is chess a sport?
It's a game.
Definitely a game.
So, yeah.
So I heard... I don't know if how correct it is. I'd have to look it up. But I heard, listening to another podcast, that professional chess players burn an insane amount of calories during a game. Even though they're just sitting, because of how fast their minds are working, they are actually burning those calories. So you have to, in a way, have some sort of quote unquote fitness. You have to be calorie, you know, properly fed caloric wise in order to play chess. So what about video games?
I mean, yeah, video games take skill, and it takes, you know, some kind of physical, you know, I mean, your reaction time and everything. So I mean, I'm totally fine with people making money off of it.
Yeah, me too.
But I don't think it's necessarily on the same level as like, you know, a more physical sport.
I would.
I'm not sitting here being like, yeah, they're like basketball players.
No. So I think the word, when we think of sport, so I think it could be considered a sport, but it's not necessarily athletic.
Yeah. Okay. Golf. Golf's like a sport, but it's not really like, is it athletic? I don't know.
I think there is an amount of athleticism that you have to have in the, you know, the physicality of hitting something and the angle and power, all that. So maybe it's not athletic like basketball for sure. But yeah, I think maybe something could be a sport if you don't necessarily have to be athletic, like lawn bowling. That's a sport, but my grandma can play it.
Hey.
So. Yeah.
Excuse me, while grandma's playing like Call of Duty in the old folks' home. Give it, you know, 20, 30 years.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Our generation definitely will. There'll be a video game ward for the elderly. 100%.
Nice.
Right?
Can't wait, man.
they'll
be there now.
It'll be VR by then, and they'll all still think that they're young. Okay.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yes, we're back. We had a little recording glitch there where me and Ricky froze on each other. Yeah, so I was just saying how that will be a very fun time when our old age homes will have very different rooms of entertainment to keep us occupied because of all the things we've gotten used to. Think of all the movies by that time, the Netflix that they'll have. Oh,
man.
Can't be that.
We'll be on phase six, seven of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It's true. That's hilarious. So I intended when we started or when we planned this podcast to talk about a theme of changes. This year is full of changes. We've changed presidents. We've changed the way we are able to shake hands or hug. We've got an elbow bump now and all this other crap. It's a year full of changes. So I wanted to ask you, Ricky Lima, some of the things that you've encountered, been entertained by, experienced that have changed you. So is there an album, a piece of music, any genre that when you heard it or when you understood it, it like changed Ricky? What would it have been?
Oh, man. Probably System of a Down's Toxicity album. That, like, before that, I was just some, like, punk kid. And then when that came out, I was like, whoa, wait, whoa, what is this? And then, like, musically, I was like, oh, yeah, this is wicked. But then I think the ideas behind their music, too, like, what they stood for and what they talked about, really started to, like, influence me. So System of a Down totally, like, radicalized me. Now I'm, like, you know, throwing smoke bombs in the streets. No. But, you know, it kind of opens your eyes to, like, you know, the society's not as great as, you know, you think it is. So then from there, you kind of, you know, explore other things and listen to other stuff. And then, yeah, so that's probably, you know, the beginning of the influential stuff. And then there's another album, Mr. Bungle. They have an album, California. And I think that then changed my mind or opened my mind up to like weird stuff. Now things don't need to be normal because that album is like just nuts. There's like so much going on in it. And I was like, oh, this is music right here. Like all this crazy stuff. But then it kind of extends beyond just music because, you know, because it's so creative and so like crazy, you kind of, you know, extend that to your life. And you're like, oh, not everything needs to be like normal or you know, the same. So.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting how I think more than anything in life, I maintain that the arts change us, right? Because it the sciences and the maths, they give us, I guess, answers in a way. You know, there's a fact to them. That's what it is.
Yeah.
This is how it works. Whereas the arts help us get the meaning that we're looking for. And it becomes very individualized of how the same song can mean two different things to us and neither of them will be incorrect. And I think like for you to have that experience with System of a Down to say that it radicalizes you, but then the next thing that you're willing to check out then opens you up to infinite possibilities. Like that's, yeah, that's exactly the coolest thing.
Like it's almost like, you know, art asks the questions that science is then just answers, you know what I mean? So it's like, they kind of work together at the same time, right?
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. So you wouldn't have a lot of cool art without the science to back it up.
You know what I mean? Absolutely. Yeah. Well, even just the stuff that we like, all of the fantasy and the sci-fi, so many of those ideas come from the science that exists, that they, you know, they've discovered something. And then the writers that we like build on the possibilities of those things that they found. And later on, the sciences will say, well, let's see if we can create that computer.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, there is a synergy.
And it's like these two people, they all think differently, right? Like the scientists might not be able to think up what these writers are coming up with. But then once they see it, they're like, oh, yeah, okay, this makes sense. Let's see like how we can make it work, right?
Yeah.
So every lab needs a writer just sitting there and just pumping out random crap.
Yeah. And I guess it's important too for both sides, because like, I think you make a good point that they think differently. And the way that they interact or see how the world should function, one side will be very like organized, fitting all the pieces together, whereas the other genius will have all the papers spread out on the table and, you know, they'll find something there. But we got to let each other exist in those spaces. I think we're oftentimes saying, no, you got to be more like us. You got to be more like us. Just keep doing what you're doing, and let's intersect where we must. But when we start insisting that one side needs to be more like me, we're missing that inspiration, that spark, the reaction that we need to have. Maybe I'm crazy.
What's an album that changed you, man?
Sometimes the albums that change me may have been something that I had listened to a lot and I liked it, but then I matured enough to appreciate it for its totality. So I think one that kind of comes to mind as a hip hop guy would have been Mos Def, Black on Both Sides, because I liked him as a rapper, but then I saw that he was very eclectic in his musical approaches, and I didn't always appreciate the other songs that were more melodic. And then it just hit me in a little bit more of mature age where I was like, well, this is much, much better than I even thought it was. And I liked it before. Another one would have been, have you ever heard of a group called Little Brother?
No.
Okay. So in the early-ish 2000s, they released, something. It was underground at the time. And it was very hard to find a physical copy of the album, so I downloaded it and really wanted to check it out. And it helped me see the type of artist I could be while still being authentic without having to pose and keep up with the sort of rhetoric that was regular in hip hop.
Okay,
So you can still have MC-ish bravado, but say that you're driving in a regular car. I don't make a lot of money. I do work at UPS to pay the bills, but music is my art. This is my outlet to talk about life. Like, you can do anything. So they were two regular guys from North Carolina. Them being from the South, they didn't make Southern sounding music. It was very much in the vein of East Coast native tongue, Tribe Called Quest, Pete Rock sort of sound. And they just rapped about going out hanging with friends, or it's not that it had never been done before, but for me, realizing like I could do that, I can relate to writing something that way instead of being a tough guy, which I'm not. So it
you're pretty tough.
Yeah, right. it was funny. Sam Noir described me, because there's always that joke that people forget me after they've met me sort of thing. Shane always breaks my balls about that. But Sam was like, well, he does kind of fit the description of a serial killer, right?
What? I don't know about that.
He was like, he's got a friendly face, a nice smile. He's got glasses. White male, certain height, like you kind of fit into that. Nobody would suspect you, but then you turn. I'm like, okay, I've never been described as that, and it's making sense, and I don't like it.
No, come on, you're not gonna be a serial killer.
No, I'm not going to be, because I'm not one. But the way Sam described me, I was like, wow, I never thought.
Well,
that.
You know what? If you were a serial killer,
yeah,
I wouldn't rat you out. I would just let it. I'd let you slide.
You wouldn't put it on Facebook that you knew me.
Exactly. Well, no, I'm just saying I wouldn't rat you out to the cops.
Thank you.
Is what I'm saying.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, so as a writer yourself, was there a particular writer whose works, not just maybe a character who you followed, or a series of books that you followed, it didn't matter who was writing, but you started to, this guy changed how I see the medium or how I read prose? Did you have a writer that changed you in that way and changed how you wanted to write?
First getting into comics as an adult in university was like, classic Frank Miller, Alan Moore kind of stuff. But then I think I got more into Grant Morrison and his stuff. Like, his stuff's so good, man. Most of the time I kind of don't understand what's going on. I'll give him that. Like, he's pretty confusing sometimes. But when I get what's going on, oh, it's so good. Like, his whole X-Men run, the new X-Men, It's so good. Everything in that story is like the best. And then, you know, his run on Superman, All-Star Superman, I think it was. I think that was Grant Morrison. So good. That was like the best Superman story ever told. So, Grant Morrison's probably like, and like Animal Man, so good. Everything he does, man.
Did you read Doom Patrol?
No. That's one thing I still need to read. Is that good?
I haven't. I plan to read it. I own the collection of it. Invisibles, I feel like I'd really have to like Grant Morrison so much to venture into that territory of the Invisibles, because I know it gets very heady. I agree with you. A lot of times I don't know what's going on, and I feel it turns me off from his stuff, but then for some reason I'll catch up to certain ideas, like The Animal Man, for instance. I recently read the first 13 issues of that, and I thought it was great. I know it's very early Grant Morrison, but it made me say, okay, if this is the kind of stuff he was doing here in the beginning, and his stuff, they say, gets better, I want to give the other stuff a try. So I feel like certain writers I catch up to, and then I'm ready to appreciate, as opposed to, well, he's good, so I got to like it kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the thing about Grant Morrison is like he has fun with his work. He's not like, he's a very like, you know, like spiritual and like heady guy, but at the same time, like, he's having fun. You know what I mean? Like, in X-Men, in New X-Men, where Professor X has like, he's like choking out another fetus inside his mother's womb. Like, yeah, there's like, you know, kind of ideas behind that, but at the same time, it's a badass like sequence. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's what I really like about Grant Morrison, is like he's got ideas, but at the same time, he's not afraid to like have fun and do cool things. So it's like, yeah, man, let's just go crazy. Let's have fun.
Yeah, I think as I mature, I guess, in my reading, I'll start to cat, like, it's even things like Neil Gaiman. I never read any Neil Gaiman coming up reading comics, even up until now. But now I'm kind of at that space where I want those type of stories. I want to read stuff like that where it's beyond just the typical storytelling you're used to, which are still great, but when you do get into like a Warren Ellis Planetary, and there's stories about stories kind of thing, and there's these snapshots of amazing things that are part of a greater tapestry that you don't really realize, and that it all comes together, and I love stuff like that. But before, I was used to the standard, you know, superhero fare, if you will, which is comfort food. It's nice.
Yeah, totally. Like this new X-Men stuff that's coming out with Krakoa. I think it's like it's comforting, because it's like, yeah, there's like pretty classic X-Men situations. But at the same time, it's not like groundbreaking or anything. You're not like, whoa, revolutionary storytelling over here, you know. So,
are you enjoying it? I haven't read anything past the House of X series. How are you enjoying it?
Yeah. I've actually been collecting like literally everything, because I was really into it, and I thought it was pretty good. I haven't read like recently, like that Swords of X and stuff. I haven't read that stuff yet, but I have on my list, so I will. But yeah, I think it was a smart idea to like kind of reboot in that way. But at the same time too, like for me, X-Men has always been like a very modern, forward thinking, like city people kind of book, you know what I mean? So seeing them in a jungle and doing like jungle rituals, I'm like, what the hell? It, like, for me, it doesn't quite mesh. But I mean, that's not like out of the realm of the X-Men. There's always been, you know, the Savage Land, and there's always been like, you know, the Morlocks and stuff. So it's not like a crazy idea. But when I think of like Charles Xavier's X-Men, they live in a city and they, you know, interact with people in a city, but not anymore. Not anymore.
So is it living up to the hype that was House of X for you, or do you prefer that classic sort of X-Men being city folk type of story?
Yeah, I don't know. For the most part, it lived up to what was going on, because they still kind of had some city stuff, like when they would go on like diplomatic missions to like other places and stuff. That was cool. But yeah, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I think House of X and Powers of X set up a more kind of action oriented and epic story than what we eventually got. Because, like, I mean, in X-Men, I forgot what issue it is, maybe like 10 or something. It's like literally just like a NATO meeting. Like, that's the whole issue, is them just like debating politics. And like, it was interesting. But at the same time, it's like, you know, House of X and Powers of X, you had like Wolverine in space being like burnt up by a sun. And you're like, that's wicked. So to like juxtapose the two, you're like, yeah, it says, yeah, you know, they promised a lot, but then now they're just, you know, having political debates, which is a little boring. But yeah, I don't know if you noticed, but I like my comics to be fun.
Mm. So. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. How do you feel about politics in comics? Because there's always been that seed of it, just the way Marvel Comics and even DC, like, they were propaganda for World War II, Superman and all that kind of stuff, Captain America. But what do you think should be the balance of how the medium uses, you know, whatever social events or social issues that are occurring, political issues, should they be the heavy center point of the books? Or would you prefer just tell me a story?
No, I mean, I'm totally down with, like, you know, them saying stuff and like doing political statements and like putting in all this like stuff, because I mean, that's like our world now, but make it fun and make it interesting. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I'm reading these books, man. Like, you can say whatever the hell you want, as long as it's cool and interesting, I'm reading it. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't know. There's, like, I've heard some criticism on, like, Steven Universe, where they're like, well, it has LGBT representation, but they're all, like, you know, space aliens, so it's not really, like, you know, the same. And it's like, well, that's the whole point, you know what I mean? It's like, make it interesting. Say what you're doing, but make it interesting, you know what I mean?
What was the series that you referred to?
Steven Universe. So, like, they're all kind of like crystal gems and stuff. I haven't seen the whole thing, so I don't know if they're like gems come to life or not. But yeah, there's like all this like LGBTQ themes, but people are like, well, because they're like not human, it's not as like representative. And it's like, well, but that's the whole point, man. It's like, make it interesting. Say what you got to say, but to do it in an interesting way.
Yeah, I'm on the fence when it comes to how obvious sometimes representation is done, because I grew up feeling, and I could be wrong, but I grew up, my favorite shows were, you know, Family Matters and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and The Cosbys, as well as Full House or Friends or Seinfeld, and Golden Girls. And I felt within all of those things, you got a very diverse types of stories and people, and I didn't notice. Like, I think the best type of representation is when you don't notice. Like, that's just who it is. That's the character. Whereas when you, some, like you're saying, you know, making it a point to make it this, it's like, no, it is cool because they're doing it, and it is what it is. You made it interesting. You made it fun. You made it there. Does what I said make sense?
Yeah, no, I definitely see what you're saying. It's like, it's interesting that, you know, these people, they always wanted to be like it was back in the day, but back in the day is exactly what it's like now. You know what I mean? Like, there's no difference. It's just what they're talking about maybe is different. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, shows like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and the Cosby, like, those are kind of tough ones to talk about, because, like, you know, they're representing these like rich, affluent people, and it just, they just so happen to be black. You know what I mean? So it's like, they still kind of like relate to like Full House and stuff because they're these privileged people, but, you know, so I think Fresh Prince is more in common with family, with Full House than it does with, like, I don't know, what's like, I don't remember a lot of the shows. Martin, that Martin Short show. I don't know. He wasn't rich in that, was he?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think for me, as a person of that a youth during that time, it was that seeing affluent people who weren't what you expected affluent people to look like was it normal. Like, there's no reason why a black person can't be rich. Like, I grew up, I didn't see, like, well, they, if you're really going to tell their story, you know, you really got to make it in this demographic or in this part of the, the Cosby shouldn't live in the nice part of Brooklyn. Like, I'm like, why can't they? Why can't they be rich? Like, that was the impression it had on me. So I grew up seeing, why shouldn't you be? That's how it affected me, right? Where if we're, because then there's the complaint where they only ever want to show us in this light, where when you watch Black Panther, it's like, no, it's royalty. Like, this is good.
Right.
To have that sense of history, and that's a diversity, but it seems so organic. Like, you almost believe Wakanda's real because it's done so well. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I prefer when it's done in a way where you don't feel like they've checked off a box to make sure that's there. Make sure you got this character. Make sure you got that character. It's just like, that's the characters. Don't touch them. Leave my characters the way they are without having to make sure this is accommodated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I get you. And it's like, you know, new spaces too, you know what I mean? Like, what's the point of just changing the character to fit something else when you just make a new character, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree.
I guess Miles Morales is like the perfect example.
Perfect.
Of, like, you know, it's Spider-Man, but it's a new Spider-Man, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's fine. Yeah. This Spider-Man exists and this Spider-Man exists, and that's fine. You know what I mean?
And yeah, you can love both or dislike one, like the other. You're right. It's the perfect solution where instead of reversing time and taking people off stage to make it fit quotas, you just make a character that's kick-ass. Kamala Khan, like one of my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Just great. And she's
she's awesome.
She's awesome. And it just is. It just feels like that's who would live where she lives. It's perfect. Is there, speaking of series like that, is there a series, comic book series that, changed you? I know you mentioned a bunch of Grant Morrison, so maybe this is a redundant question, but sometimes there's ones where you're not necessarily a fan of in the beginning, but you gave it an unexpected chance and it was like, wow, that's a game changer.
I don't know. Man, that's a tough question. I don't know.
It could be something you mentioned, I guess, already.
The Dark Tower series that Marvel put out that were based on Stephen King's books, those are pretty sweet. And those were literally what got me into comics because I read the Dark Tower books and I was like, oh, these are cool. And then I found out Marvel's doing that and I was like, oh, I'll check these out. So I started picking up comics at my local comic shop, like literally just the Dark Tower. And then I was like, maybe all these other books. So then I started reading those. So that's probably the book that like changed me the most.
That's so cool to think that the comic adaptation of a book made you like the rest of the medium. That's
well, neat. They did something a little bit different with the Dark Tower, where they told them in between the books, or like before the books. So it wasn't necessarily like they just adapted the books, is like
okay.
new stories behind gotcha. It. So it was really cool. And it was drawn by Jay Lee. So, I mean, I think that right. And they got this, this woman, Robin Firth, I think her name is, and she worked with Stephen King. Because like, there's a big gap between book 1 to 4, Stephen King wrote like consecutively. And then there was a large gap before he started number 5. So in order to like get back into it, he worked with this Robin Firth person to like reacquaint him with the world. So she kind of wrote like an encyclopedia of the Dark Tower. So then she wrote that book, which is really cool. So she knew like everything about the series. So that was a good adaptation, man. You should check it out.
What would be your elevator pitch synopsis of The Dark Tower? Because I've been looking into reading Stephen King books, not knowing where to start. And I know Dark Tower is beloved. What would be the synopsis of it without a spoiler?
That's hard, man, because it's like 7 books and it's so like expansive. It's like about a cowboy who is caught in between, you know, the fate of his like of his destiny. There's like he's got this destiny and trying to like save all the people that he meets along the way. That's probably like, I don't know if that's a good pitch in that, but
that sounds really cool.
But it gets pretty wild. It's like, you know, there's Doom Bots. They appear. Snitches from Harry Potter's in it. It's crazy, man.
Wow, that's cool. So is it considered a horror, sci-fi, horror fantasy? What would it fit
into? It's more like sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, it's totally sci-fi. It's, I don't think there's any really horror aspects to it. I put it firmly in the realm of sci-fi. So that's really the only Stephen King books I've read is the Dark Tower series. I never read anything else. So I don't know what his other stuff's like.
Okay, good to know. It definitely piques my interest the way you described it. It could someone else be that's not what it's about, but I'm more inclined to read it now. Yeah.
And like don't watch the movie. There's that Dark Tower movie. It stinks so bad.
Yeah.
It doesn't get anything what's going on. It doesn't get it.
I don't think some books that are would be so beautiful to visualize them, they can't be done in movies. I think the Netflix model of expanding a story to really get all of the different complexities of it and layers is one of the best ways to now tell stories. Like you watch you've watched Daredevil?
Yeah.
Yeah. To see it episodic like that is so much better than what they could do in a movie. Like that's a perfect example of a character who shouldn't, even a Spider-Man in a way. I feel Spider-Man would be better in a television show. It'd be costly. But the way his character develops, you need it episodic, I feel. So Dark Tower probably wouldn't translate well to a movie if the way you're saying is there's 8 books.
Yeah, it's like it's so intense, it's huge, but yeah, no, Dark Tower is wicked, and the comics are wicked too, and they totally influenced me. And I saw Jay Lee at a convention once, and I was like, "Hey man, your Dark Tower stuff got me into comics." He was like, "Cool." And I was like, all right, okay, see you later. that's the main interaction with these people, right? You know, they don't really care. But I thought he should know, you know?
Yeah, no, listen, I'm a big supporter of if you can tell somebody that you appreciate something they created, you should. Because that's probably the best reward. Obviously, money would be great to be paid for your work, but to know that it becomes somebody's favorite story. I think you had that experience, right? Where somebody who had bought your book at one con, the little girl came back and it was her favorite book. And so like meeting the person who wrote it was a big deal to her.
Yeah, that was weird. I was like, what? This is crazy. But that's pretty awesome. Yeah. And it makes it all worthwhile. Like, you know, with Undergrowth, I've probably put like, I don't even want to count how much money I put into this book. But anytime someone's like, hey, this book's really great, I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. That's worth it, Dan. That's worth it.
Yeah, and I think because you've got you're going to have all 8 issues, and what'll be cool is like you'll have it in the black and white original, you'll have it in the color format, and then if you do collect it in a trade of some sort, there'll be so many different ways for people to enjoy it. That'll be really cool to have under your belt.
Hopefully. Like my goal is like the single issues to keep them black and white and sell out of like my stock and then get a publisher to publish the graphic novel in color. And like, you know, that will be like my thing, my introduction into the industry, you know what I mean? But
right.
Who knows? Who knows if anyone's publishing anything anymore? I don't know.
they'll be publishing Kickstarter. You'll join Sam Noir in the Kickstarter wars to see who has a better year.
Oh man, see, but it's more than just like I'm on like a publisher with like a marketing budget and like a team behind it to push the book.
It'll happen.
You know what I mean? Like
it will happen. Man. Don't worry, Rick. It'll happen. You just gotta.
And then it's like a prestige thing, you know? Like I want Fan Expo to be like, hey, here is a table. You know, I don't want to pay for my tables anymore, man. I'm sick of paying for stuff.
I'm with you. My whole thing when I started this podcast, people would say to me, you know, what's your end game? Like, do you want to make it a business? I go, I just want to get into Fan Expo free.
Yeah, really? Like, give me that stuff, man. Jeez.
Yeah, I said if I could get into Fan Expo as a guest or as a moderator, well then I'll have done my job.
But I mean, you've done that, right? You've accomplished your goal, right?
Getting into Fan Expo free? No, never.
Yeah,
never.
Haven't you moderated some panels?
I wish. I'd love to. It's my dream. Never.
Well, you know what? We'll talk to Kevin Boyd. We'll be like, look here, punk.
Hopefully enough of the local guys will vouch for me and they'll trust me if I ever moderate a panel for them. But yeah, that's the end game. One day. One day your book will be published.
And my first panel, you'll moderate.
There we go. We put it in the universe. It's going to happen. Okay. So here's a question of change. What's something that you once hated, but now you love? Have you ever experienced that?
Man. That's a tough question. Something that I hated.
Maybe not hate. Hate is strong, but something you're like, meh, whatever. And then it turned out you loved it.
Oh, man. I don't know. Do you have one? Maybe while you're talking about it, I can think about mine.
I'm trying to think of... There's probably... You know what I didn't care much for? And this is very popcorn answer, but... wasn't really sure how I felt about... Well... No, that'd be incorrect. Because I was going to say cosmic storytelling, but I always liked Star Wars and I enjoyed Green Lantern, so it wouldn't be true. But like the Marvel cosmic, Jack Kirby, Thor, Jim Starlin stuff, like Annihilation, I never cared. All the times I saw Annihilation on a shelf and then I read it and I loved it. Guardians of the Galaxy, didn't have any interest in it at all. Turned out that I really liked that whole universe. Probably more than anything that I like, you know, street level wise. I thought street level comics, that's the stuff. But I love Jim Starlin Thanos stories. But I never hated it. Sorry, go ahead, Ricky. You're saying Jim Starlin?
No, Jim Starlin, he's wicked. It's Infinity War, I thought was like choice comics. I can't get better than.
No, it's true, and it's very popcorny in the way he and bombastic in the storytelling. But I love the layer of philosophy that goes along with it. That if you read it more than once, you can kind of see beyond just the punching and fighting, bam pow aspect of it, which I think is very, very interesting. Because the guys who came from the 70s that were able to kind of be a little bit weird and you know, you think of Steve Englehart or Steve Gerber and Jim Starlin, and they were just kind of going places that very psychedelic.
And yeah, Steve Gerber was a little weird though. I wouldn't. He sometimes his stuff was a little weird. I was like, I don't know about this guy.
Yeah, and I think they influenced the guys who came after them in a way where they're like, oh, you could do that. We could figure out a smart way to do something, you know. So that whole generation of guys who grew up as teenagers in the 60s or were part of the Vietnam War and went through the whole hippie era, there's something in their comics that is, it's interesting. And I like looking back in them or reading some of the stuff that they put in play and just kind of exploring their mind. It's pretty cool for me.
All right.
Have you thought of something?
I think so. emo music. And because, like, in, I remember in high school, I was like, what is this crap? What is this bull? And so I was like, you know, I was pretty against all that stuff. And it wasn't because I was like, you know, it was just because I thought I was too cool. You know, I was like, emo music, what is this crap? And then, but just recently, actually, like maybe within the last like 2 years, I've started to like look back and like check out some of the music that I just kind of like dismissed back in high school. And I'm like, I missed out on some really good music. What the hell's wrong with me? So, you know, like, I guess maybe like you grow up and you become less like self-conscious about the way the world sees you. And then you allow yourself to like listen to stuff and without judgment. And then you're like, oh yeah, this is actually pretty cool. So, Gerard Way, My Chemical Romance. I'm sorry. I didn't like you at first, but now I do. So,
yeah, it's true, right? There's a time where it's not cool to like this or to even entertain. Yeah. Like this is the stuff that certain people like, but we make fun of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you catch up to
that, then you can like really kind of live life, you know?
Yeah, yes, yeah, exactly. I think when you're posturing or telling yourself you don't like something just for the sake of whatever virtue you feel that gives you, it's when you get over that, like you let your ego go and like, this is actually pretty good.
Right. And like that applies to like literally anything in the world. Cause like you have so many people out there who don't like stuff simply because like, I don't know, they think it's like, I literally don't know why these people don't like things, but they don't. And it's like, dude, just like stop hating on stuff and just like let people enjoy things, you know? Like, I guess it's like, you know, like being gay. It's like a lot of people have problems with it. And it's like, why? Literally, why? Why do you have a problem with what someone does with their life? You know what I mean? It doesn't make any sense. So if you just chill out and like allow the world just to like be itself, you'd be so much more happy, you know?
Yeah, it definitely begs you to ask the question sometimes of, why do I get worked up about stuff? Because I definitely myself get worked up about all kinds of things. When I, like we were saying before, about Facebook or something you see on TV, someone said something stupid and you get worked up for stuff. And we often, even when we feel we're on the right side of stuff, we're always ready to die on our sword. And it's like, just relax and let people be. Just be kind. Let people be, even if you don't necessarily like it. It's like, don't sit there, exactly. Sit over there and don't like it. Let the person be.
Yeah. As long as it's not hurting anyone, like, whatever, man, you know?
Yeah.
Like if a racist guy is like, you know, I hate all black people, then you're like, all right, okay, maybe that's a harmful viewpoint, you know? Like, if you're actively trying to harm someone, maybe you get bent out of shape about that, you know? And you'd be like, look, man, that's not cool. But if someone's like, hey, I don't like bananas, you're like, cool, man. That's cool. Don't eat bananas then, you know? So.
You're funny. What a contrast from...
you know, it's like, if it doesn't hurt anyone and it's not oppressing anyone, it's like, who cares, man? Whatever.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it goes with anything in life, right? Even food. Some people don't... I won't eat it. I'm not going to have it. You crazy...
Yeah, it's like, right? It's like, just eat it, man, whatever.
Try it. See if you don't like it. If you don't like it, then we know. And then at least you can say you tried it. At least you can say you read the book or you tried the show. You know that you don't like it. Now we can talk about why. But yeah, when you just kind of shut things down, like we did as kids with music, so much ideas and imagination that you are robbing yourself of.
True, man. Like, I mean, NSYNC, Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys, I remember I was like, I'm so much cooler than that. What are you talking about? But now I'm like, yeah, man, this stuff's the best. So,
you know, it's, I mean, I was the ripe age for all of that stuff. But you later on realize that those songs were all hits for a reason. And it isn't, right. It wasn't because the music was necessarily bad. The guy who wrote the songs was pretty smart to know what would hit. There is a science to it.
Yeah.
Even if it, and it's funny You can sometimes hear a song reworked, the same exact song reworked in the jazzy style, and you're like, this is a great song. You're like, it is Britney Spears. Right? Yeah, exactly. Has that ever happened to you? It happened to me on vacation one time where they were playing a song that I had hated, but the way that they were playing it, I'm like, this is amazing. And it was the exact same song.
Do you remember what song it was?
I don't remember, but it was being done in some type of a jazz piano bar style, and it just sounded so great. I don't know. It was one of those modern day pop stars, maybe an Ariana Grande song or something like that. But yeah, no, just give things a try. You never know. You never know. So, Ricky, what's next for you now? What are you going to be working on next? Is there any Kickstarters that are going to be starting? You just chilling and letting inspiration come to you?
Yeah, like I put a rule on myself where I'm not going to do another Kickstarter until I fulfill the other one. Like, that's just, I just have to do that. So I think that's going to be like the next thing I do, is like I need to finish that book that I Kickstarted, or else like I'm a total fraud.
You know, definitely not a fraud. But if people want to pick up the books that you currently are working on and have put out there, where can they find your stuff?
LimePressOnline.com. That's where everything is. And there's that new book. This is pretty exciting. There's this woman I knew from like literally elementary school, like so like 25 years ago, and she drew these like fan art things of like a badass female pop culture characters. And then I was like, dude, we need to make this into a book. So then we did. And this is like the first book of someone else's stuff that I've ever like published, quotation marks. I mean, it's not exactly like me publishing them, but that was a really cool experience. And I want to do more, man. I want to like put out more people's books. Put them out in the world. Eric, you got a book inside of you that you want to do?
If I do, you're the person I will let know for sure.
All right, cool. Sweet. So it's pretty cool to like, you know, publish someone else's work, because I don't need to worry about, you know, any of the writing or art behind it, because I didn't do it. So whatever.
So maybe you'll have the publishing company when it comes. Oh, there it is. People can't see it, but we should put the link up for it. Very cool. Maybe you'll be the person with the publishing company who will publish your first book.
Oh, man. I mean, maybe.
Right?
That'd be cool. If I could make a lot of money doing that, that'd be cool. But I don't know if me by myself, I don't think I could do it. I suck at like promotion and all that. So maybe I'll need to hire somebody to help.
Well, you got a lot of people, you know, who will definitely hype up and know how to promote for you. You know that. You're surrounded by good people that way. And all your Kickstarters have kicked ass, so you're good, man.
Yeah, well, I guess.
So I've been talking to some of our mutual friends, and I want to be able to podcast with you guys more frequently. So I hope to have you on the show in a couple of episodes instead of a couple of months, like in, you know, 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
If you're up for it, I'm down to chit chat and talk about whatever comes to mind if you're cool with it. So I hope you come back on the show soon.
Definitely, man. Yeah, this is the best podcast on the internet.
Is it
better than that Joe Rogan douche? No.
I don't know about that, but I appreciate it. I'll try to be as big as him in the comic books community of Toronto. That'll be good enough.
Oh, man, that's such a niche thing. You do more than that.
That's why it's something that I can do pretty quick if I just keep doing it the way I am.
Comics podcast filmed in Toronto that is recorded on this type of mic, and it's like, just keep on giving yourself
a hashtag. Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, dude, you have yourself a good night. I appreciate your time, and we'll talk soon. And tell everybody one more time where they can go to.
Lime Press Online. That's LimePress O-N-L-I-N-E .com. And you don't realize how long this word is until it's like you have to spell it out.
It's true. Until you spelled that out, I didn't realize, like, that is a long address for a website. But linepressonline.com, everybody. Thank you, Ricky. Go continue. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I was originally going to just be linepress.com, but some other person bought that domain, so screw them. So now I'm Linepress Online.
I like it. Thanks, Ricky. This has been a blast as always, and we will meet up together soon. You take care, stay safe, and don't catch the vid again.
Well, I'm immune, man. I'm immortal now.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will chat soon.